You are listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, TWC's Peace Talk.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to TWC's Peace Talk radio show. I am Annie Mae Lee, the Outreach and Prevention Coordinator at TWC. Our mission in the region is to provide safe, empowering services for families experiencing domestic or sexual violence. We seek to promote violence-free communities through culturally appropriate outreach programs and supportive services. The Peace Talk radio show is our opportunity to let the region know what works we are doing and answer questions if people have them. This is a call-in show, so please feel free to call these numbers for questions. The call-in numbers are 543-5985, 543-2756, and 1-800-995-8954. After the radio show, if people want to know more about TWC, please call any of our numbers. So our 24-hour crisis line is 907-543-3456. The toll-free is 1-800-478-7799, and our business line is 543-3444. So TWC's thrift store is open Saturdays from 1 to 3 as long as there are volunteers. Sometimes there are different hours, so you'll have to call TWC's thrift store at 543-3474. If you're interested in volunteering, please call TWC at 543-3444 and ask to speak to Louise. Always call before you go by. There is a Homeless Connect event at the Cultural Center today from 11 to 1, so feel free to stop by the Cultural Center for a free meal and get connected to resources. When you register for your dividend, remember to pick, click, give. TWC is one of many YK Delta nonprofits that benefit from Alaska's generosity. When you pick, click, give. If you pick, click, give to YK Delta nonprofit, then you are automatically entered into Give and Get drawing hosted by Bethel Community Services Foundation. There are two winners to the drawing each year, and first prize gets $1,000 for themselves and can designate another $1,000 to the nonprofit of their choice. Second prize wins $500 for themselves and can designate $500 to the nonprofit of their choice. So I guess I'll give everybody a chance to introduce themselves.
Right. So today we are going to be talking about the Bethel Homeless Coalition, and this is Eileen Arnold, and I'm the director of the Tundra Women's Coalition. And the coalition started almost exactly 2 years ago. I was just looking at the first meeting minutes, and it was January 18th, 2017. And it started because there are a lot of agencies and community members and churches and governmental agencies, both tribal and non-tribal, that were concerned with the homelessness that we saw in our community and some of the other basic needs around, like, food and clothing that weren't being met to some of the most vulnerable in our community. So we called a lot of different people together to see if we could start a coalition. And we meet quarterly, and it turns into a lot of us people who are already providing services, getting connected, knowing what each other is doing, sharing our resources, and having several goals that we're working on together in a coordinated member. And one of the best things about the coalition is just the wide variety of interests on the coalition. So we're going to let people introduce themselves. Like I said, TWC is a member of the coalition. We host most meetings right there at TWC. As the only year-long shelter in the Delta, in Bethel, clearly we've got an interest in the homelessness that we see. The homelessness that we deal with is usually due to domestic or sexual violence. So it makes sense that we'd be sitting on the coalition. So how about we just go in around?
Good morning. My name is Deanne Watkins, and I am a tribal case manager for the Department of Veteran Affairs. I'll give a little spiel about our program. As I stated, I'm a tribal case manager for the HUD-VASH tribal program. I'll tell you a little bit about it. It's a demonstration program that was developed in partnership with the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, and the Department of Veteran Affairs, Supported Housing, VASH. So you'll hear me say HUD-VASH. This was created in January of 2015. The mission is to end homelessness among Alaska Native veterans and their families by providing subsidized housing vouchers and case management support. I came into this role in November of 2018, so fairly new, and I am seeking applicants. So if you answer yes to any of the questions I'm about to pose, please contact me at AVCP, Housing Authority. Yes. Myself, or you can, I'll give the numbers at the end. So here's a couple questions to think about. Are you a homeless veteran or live in a multi-generational home and you are Alaska Native or American Indian? So that's the first part. Do you have a history of not being able to keep housing? Do you feel like no matter what you do, you can't seem to get ahead? Do you want to see positive changes in your life? Are you willing to learn new things? Are you willing to work with me, your case manager? Have you ever thought, I can do better than this, but I'm not sure how to begin? If you answer to yes to any of those, then Tribal HUD-VASH may be the program for you. Like I stated, I am located, I'm based in Anchorage. I come out to Bethel weekly unless things change, but I always let AVCPRHA know when I'm not coming out. My typical days are Monday through Wednesday. Unless Monday is a holiday, I come Tuesday through Thursday. So you can contact me at my Anchorage office. I have an office in Anchorage as well. My number is 273-4048. If I'm not at my desk, please leave me a voice message. And then you can also contact me at AVCPRHA 543-3121, and you can leave me a message there. Also working with me at AVCPRHA is Jason Smith and Catherine Cedar. So you can contact either of us and we'll be more than happy to assist. We have capacity to help 20 families, and I am needing more families to assist, and I'm looking forward to meeting you all. Thank you.
We're so glad you and your program are here. My name is Sharon Chikuchin, and I work for Family Nutrition Program. I do SNAP Ed in town, educating low-income families how to make healthy choices on a tight budget. And then I'm one of the board members for the Bethel Winter House. Anything else? I don't know.
Okay, and my name's Michelle DeWitt, and I'm the director of Bethel Community Services Foundation, and we're a member of the Housing Coalition. And one of the roles that we play is to try to keep the topic of housing first, which we'll talk about later, at the forefront of our conversations when it comes to homelessness and providing housing for homeless people.
All right. So the first question I want to ask you is, so what are the goals of the coalition?
So this is Eileen. And in one of our first meetings, I think we were able to come up with just three simple goals that are long-term goals. We weren't going to, you know, whenever you're dealing with a topic like this, there's a lot of different influencing factors. The reasons for homelessness are multi-layered and complicated. And sometimes for the amount of time that somebody is homeless, you kind of need that amount of time to be able to connect them to enough resources to come back into stability. So the goals we chose were all sort of long ranging, but the goals included making the winter house a full year shelter so that we could have that security all year long. We wanted to explore housing first, which is a housing that we'll talk about a little bit later. We specifically developed a subcommittee around that because there's a lot of work that would go into bringing that programming here. And we also wanted to address youth homelessness, which is a hard thing to collect data about because it's very easy to collect data about adults experiencing homelessness, but sometimes youth who are experiencing homelessness or precarious housing, it's hard to pick up on the radar. We do have LKSD on our housing coalition as well, and a couple other people who are interested in starting some specific services for that. But those are the three goals. And for all of these goals to work, we need to know what's going on out there. A lot of us have got our hands in different sorts of programs where we collect data and can say, you know, there's like 500 people a year who go through TWC. This many people go to the food bank. But we needed a complete picture so that when we decide on the types of services we want to implement and offer to people, that it's data-based, that we're providing a safety net for sort of the most vulnerable and the people who most need services and maybe are using the most emergency services. So those are the goals of the coalition, and I think we're going along swimmingly so far.
Sure. I'm wondering if some people out there are wondering exactly where is the Winter House now, how far we've come and where we began. So I just thought I'd take a moment and let you know how the Bethel Winter House came to be. Was first people just like what you're describing, people in town who realized we need to address homelessness here in Bethel and what could be done and who could do it. In the beginning, we had churches and others. Churches hosted a place for the people to sleep and lots of volunteers coming to spend the night. The program is open from 9 p.m. until about 7 in the morning, and we had all volunteer staff that first year, maybe two. Now we have some funding. We have paid staff, and last year we had two paid staff, and last year they added one more to help navigate emergencies or security. So that's where we are now, with some paid staff. Volunteers in town mostly provide dinners. So we have volunteer people provide dinners each night. And the problem with it just being housed in a church volunteer, that's a donation too, just to get it expanding some hours. People can't come to the shelter until 9 p.m., and they all have to be out the door before 7.
Yeah, but it really has come a long way. And again, mostly through an excellent board, through good staff, and through a lot of volunteers. You guys do a great job at getting those meals donated all winter long. So for the representation that we have in the room today, I wanted to let people know about what the successes of the coalitions are. And the first thing that I'd say is just it's a very broad coalition, which I think is excellent. We have nonprofits like the Winter House and TWC. We have people from ABCP RHA, ABCP ONC. We have the Bethel Community Services Foundation. We have a number of churches. We have LKSD. We have the City of Bethel. And that's really how you address these issues that impact the entire community. You get broad engagement, broad involvement, so that we're not duplicating services and so that we're reaching everybody. And that's the success that I would note for sure. And Deanne, you're new to the coalition, but Sharon, Michelle, what would you say the successes have been?
I'd say one, that really what you just said, to bring everybody to the table and to let each of us see what other agencies in town are providing, and maybe ideally we see where we aren't providing or how we could work together to best do that. The other thing is the Housing Coalition is actually almost required for some of the funding we get. Some of our projects, the state is going to ask if you're involved with a Housing Coalition, and in the past we all had to say Bethel didn't have that, so now we have that, which is a good thing.
And this is Michelle. I would add to that, I think one benefit. The meeting is quarterly, so it's not onerous on anyone's schedule. It allows people to connect around this one topic that we weren't specifically connecting about before. And it has led to being able to think about long-term, long-range planning to address the needs of vulnerable people who are currently in this community. And so over the years, I think all of us have seen programs that start really quickly with maybe too much, without enough forethought, that then can't last long term in the community. They're not sustainable, or maybe they didn't have the buy-in. And I appreciate sort of the take it slow, long range planning of this group to really think through what might best work in the long run here in Bethel.
And then I would also say, and this is just a nice thing about Bethel being a small community, we're able to do some warm handoffs by better knowing each other and better knowing what each other provides. I've certainly texted Sharon in a situation where, my program couldn't offer something to somebody who was asking. And I texted a number of people, actually, but Sharon answered first, which is usually who I go with. And immediately we were able to get that woman and her children hooked up with services immediately that day.
Which, right, food and groceries, really, that day.
Yeah.
I think almost all of the referrals I have gotten actually come right from that meeting.
Right. Yeah. And that's warm handoffs is what we believe in at TWC anyway, that it's not enough to just say, oh, go here and speak to this person, but I am going to connect you. I am going to introduce you, this person. If I can't take care of you this way, then this person is going to help. And yesterday at our last meeting in preparation for the point in time, one of the service providers was like, I'm looking for this person. I want to help them. I can connect them to services. I've tried every way. How can I find this person? And that put a room full of, I think it was 15 people, on the alert. And hopefully we'll all be able to find this person and connect them to the services that, that person was concerned about. And that's just another one of the benefits of being in a small community, but also having good relationships within that coalition. And then finally, I'd say just connecting us to getting on the radar for some resources, sustainable resources, because like Sharon said, some of this stuff requires a coalition. Like those state COC or HUD streams require a coalition, require collaboration. And, if we don't have that, then we don't have anything. So, and those are good. Anything else beyond those?
Is now an appropriate time to talk a little bit about Housing First, Eileen?
Yeah.
So this is, I think, one of the ideas that the Housing Coalition has had, that it's a long-term goal, is the concept of Housing First, which we've mentioned twice on the show. And really what that concept means is that as fast as possible, when someone becomes homeless, we get them into permanent housing. And that's a little counterintuitive to the traditional model of what happens when people become homeless. So typically, as listeners might imagine, if someone becomes homeless, there's often a number of services that they are expected to engage in while working towards a final goal of having permanent housing. So that for people, that often means accessing emergency shelters and food banks and alcohol or drug addiction treatment or behavioral health services or any of the other many, many, many helpful programs and services that different organizations or groups have to offer. And then after you've achieved all those things, often then you qualify for some form of permanent housing. Or get into, a rental housing, which is considered permanent. And so Housing First, that model is reversed on its head. In Housing First, the first goal is when somebody experiences homelessness, as fast as possible, you get them into a permanent home. You do not expect that they stop drinking or using drugs. You do not expect that they're going to change behaviors immediately that they might have that have made it difficult for them to be successful in housing in the past. You get them housed and they can stay in the housing. And then from there, the data shows that people are able to really reduce drinking, reduce interactions with police, reduce ambulance rides, reduce services at the hospital and the ER significantly once their primary need of housing is met. And so this concept comes from the idea that people have a hard time getting well if they and experience much more trauma if they don't know where they're going to be tonight. And this summer, a really great article was published in the Juno Empire, because Juno last year launched a housing first model. And to share a little bit about that data that they found in the first 6 months in Juno, they operate a 32 unit housing first program, and immediately people's visits to the alcohol recovery and detox center went from 344 visits during the 6 months before people accessed Housing First to 2 visits after they had housing and Housing First. So just to say that again for folks who didn't catch that, 344 visits to a recovery center before Housing First and 2 visits after Housing First among the population. And nearly every other data set improved for those individuals as well, whether it was, police contacts went down by more than a third, ambulance calls went down exponentially, ER dropped more than a third. I mean, it's remarkable data. So following the data allows us to know that maybe looking at ways to offer a model like this in our community could be really beneficial.
And really decrease the emergency services of perhaps the sobering center or TWC or the police or the ER, the EMS calls. And it is revolutionary. It is very simply titled Housing First. We take care of this basic need, because if what you're worrying about all day long is where you're going to spend the night, it's hard to do anything else. It's hard to concentrate on anything else because that immediate survival need has not been met. Thanks, Michelle. Deanne?
Yes, I just wanted to comment on what Michelle stated about Juno's Housing First project. Just wanted to add in there that the VA also started their tribal VASH program around the same time in Juno, and they're doing very well. All 20 of the vouchers are filled there, and our program structure is Housing First as well. And so the program in Juno, we have both the tribal HUD VASH there and our regular HUD VASH program there, and they both have been doing very well.
And can you remind listeners who might have just tuned in what that VASH acronym stands for?
Stands for Veteran Affairs Supportive Housing. And it's a housing, I didn't mention this, but it's a housing subsidy. It's where the veteran, it's all income based. And so to qualify for the program, you have to be a eligible veteran. You have to meet homelessness definition, including at risk, which counts with multi-generational housing, and also poor living conditions. So I know a lot of times in the rural areas, we have a lot of poor living conditions. So that qualifies you as well. You don't have to literally be on the streets. So it's good to come get screened by me so that I could see if you're eligible for the program. But also, it's income-based. That's one of the qualifiers as well. And the voucher pays 70% of the rent, and the veteran, based on their income, pays the other 30%. So it's very sustainable and doable. You don't have to be working. You actually don't have to have income. We go off of your income if you have it.
And knowing that we have significant numbers of veterans in the YK Delta who may just be catching what you have to say, could you mention again how folks could contact you?
Yes. Again, my name is Deanne Watkins. I am the Tribal HUD VASH case manager, located stations in Anchorage, but I am in Bethel 3 days a week, typically, unless that changes, holiday or on leave or something like that. I am located when I'm in Bethel at AVCPRHA. You can give me a call there at 543-3121. You could also contact Catherine Cedars or Jason Smith. They work as well with me in that program. And then I also have an office number in Anchorage when I am not here in Bethel. My number is 273-4048, and you can leave me a voice message, and I will get to them as soon as I get back in town.
Michelle also heads up our Housing First committee within the Housing Coalition. Could you talk a little bit about the work that we've done within that committee?
Yeah, I'll talk. In the subcommittee, we kind of divided into two kind of top areas of emphasis. And we chose those areas based on a visit we had in 2017 from Nancy Burke, who coordinates the housing and homeless efforts under the Mayor Berkowitz administration in Anchorage. So we invited her out knowing she had this expertise, and we talked with her about sort of what's happening now in the community, and introduced her to different community and tribal leaders. And from that, she made a couple of recommendations about how we might begin to move this model forward. And one was around partnerships, and the other was around data and coordinated entry. And so I'll talk a little bit about the partnerships, and then Eileen can talk a little bit about her work on data. So from a partnerships perspective, before I think any sort of new effort is to happen in a community, it really needs buy-in from all the different organizations and entities. And so at this point, I've had conversations with past and current leaders of every organization in town that provides any kind of services. So city, tribe, you know, ONC, AVCP, AVCP Housing, et cetera, about the model, and about their interest in being part of a team that pursues the model. And so far, we've had 100% interest in moving forward a model that would benefit our homeless population, like Housing First. So 100% buy-in in Housing First. Once we get the data, the next level of collaboration will be the trickiest, and that is figuring out who could own a facility and who could operate a facility. And those could be the same entity or different organizations. And that's where, you know, the rubber will really hit the road in terms of buy-in about who's willing to own a place and who's willing to run it on the day-to-day. Because there are, for people living in Housing First, to help support their success, there does need to be wraparound services and lots of options available for support. One finding from some programs has been that people, when they go into Housing First, while they do really well in many areas, sometimes they become a bit more isolated because they've often been living in groups and spending time in shelters, lots of interaction, and you might go into having your own unit. And so really planning around making sure people don't get isolated and having a supportive environment goes into operating these kinds of facilities. So that's where we're at in terms of collaboration and data. There's been significant work done on data that Eileen can talk about.
Yeah. So the data subcommittee, we have a good time. As we've been talking about today, all of these, like Housing First, everything that we're doing is based on data. Like, we're really looking for data-driven solutions that have been proven to stop, to end homelessness, and also reduce those emergency services that are so costly and inefficient and ineffective in our community. So clearly, if we are going to go forward with Housing First or any sort of extra services, we need to know what homelessness looks like in Bethel, and even extending further out into our region. Like, what does that look like? Who's experiencing it? Is it bed hopping? Is it straight up homelessness on the streets? Is it sleeping in cars? Is it in a home that's not fit for habitation? Is it 17 people living in a two-bedroom home? Because certainly TWC gets a lot of calls for housing for, you know, the house is just too full. There's no way to sustain that many people. So we've been for the last year, we've been doing a much more intensive look at all the data from all the agencies that might collect data. Like TWC already collects data. The Winter Home already collects data. But this is a good segue into what's happening today. Today is the National Point in Time Homelessness Count. And what happens on this day is that we take a snapshot of what homelessness looks like in the middle of winter. So at 6:45 in the morning, volunteers were at the Winter House and doing surveys with people to get a snapshot of who is experiencing it. What did it look like? How long? Were they people who have any sort of disability? Are they veterans? Are they homeless because of domestic violence? We ask all of those questions to give us a picture of, you know, who is experiencing homelessness and what might be the reasons and how long is it? And at today at 11 o'clock, and that's why we're closing the show early at 10:45 so we can get to the Cultural Center at 11. We're providing a brunch, and we're going to be conducting more surveys. So we urge anybody, if you feel like you are dealing with homelessness or you are precariously housed, to please come by to help us gather our data so that we can make data-driven decisions about what services we're going to be providing.
And thanks, Eileen. This is Deanne. You reminded me of something when you said, when you mentioned not just here in Bethel, but out in the surrounding communities. So with our VASH program, it is definitely for not just the Bethel area, it's for the Bethel region. And so for all of the 56 villages that Bethel serves, as long as AVCP has services that area, a veteran in that area can apply for this program.
The places who are collecting data today are obviously TWC already collects data. The Winter Home collects data. We have that event at the Cultural Center where we're going to try to collect a lot of data. The City of Bethel Community Safety Patrol officers are collecting data. The City of Bethel office is collecting data. We'll be collecting some data from the jail, actually, if people get released today, which is a common form of homelessness. If you're on probation, you can't go back home, but you don't have any place set up here. I forget where else we're collecting data from, because it was an early morning for me. It's not typical for me to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I'm suffering. Where else are we collecting data?
Is the library collecting data throughout the day?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course, the library.
Right. So the Cultural Center, we are actually asking people to come by if you are living in a situation that sounds like what Eileen has described. Well, it's what we call precariously housed. It helps us get a picture of what homelessness looks like. There's going to be a survey to ask each person. And I suppose we were giving away socks and candy bars this morning to people who took the time to do that. It's not going to be attached to that person's name. It just gives us documents, really, to see exactly how many people are homeless in Bethel or close to it. And then the survey happens statewide and nationwide, and we get to see how many people really are homeless.
Mm-hmm. And like Sharon said, it's anonymous. So, you know, names don't follow these interviews. And the data is really only shared among the people collecting it so that we can really design services or request funding for projects that actually meet the needs of people who are experiencing homelessness. For Housing First, for example, that could look like housing designed for people with children, if that happens to be who's represented the most in our homeless population. It could be adult men, if that's who's represented the most in our homeless population. That's the kind of information that we will need in order to design the best project to meet the needs of our community.
And that's the data collection that's happening today. But of course, we're collecting data throughout the year. We've been trying to have more than just the snapshot, but also within our coalition, really start to bring it all together so that we can have a good picture of the wide range of what homelessness looks like. Because it's different in the cities. It's very different in Anchorage or Juneau or Fairbanks. And you know, those coalitions that are just starting to have better representation from rural parts of Alaska don't necessarily know what homelessness looks like here. And maybe they've designed programs that wouldn't necessarily work out here. So we're trying to find out for ourselves from people who are here. And that's what we'll use the data for. And it's been a fun collaborative process so far. Lots of meetings, lots of preparation, lots of paper cuts.
Right. I noticed one of the things you mentioned, Eileen, this is Sharon again. In some communities, they found it's really transient people in our hub city like Bethel. So we want to find out if the people who are experiencing homelessness now, are they actually trying to get back home? You know, that kind of thing. It gives a different kind of program that we might want to have.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And that's why we're collecting the data, so we can be data-driven.
Right. We won't know otherwise.
Eileen, could you maybe, for folks just tuning in, could you talk the hours again for the event today at the Cultural Center?
Sure. So that's our Project Homeless Connect hosted by the library, and it's in the Cultural Center. It starts at 11. We're closing our radio show at 10:45, so we can all run over there to do surveys. There's going to be a brunch. I think Teresa from the library is cooking something. I can't remember what, but I also know that one of my staff is making moose soup. So there'll be that as well. It'll go from 11 to 1. There's going to be some agencies with information. Like, I know Deanne is going to be there. So if you're interested in her program, she's going to be there and can take referrals and is there to chat for that entire time. And there will be other agencies present, but I'm not sure exactly who all will be there. But it'll be a good stop to get connected to resources. And even if we can't connect you to resources there, we can probably make some referrals. So come by, get lunch, do a survey, meet some people. And that'll be 11 to 1 today at the Cultural Center.
I know there might be people who are curious about going over to volunteer. How might you direct folks who have seen the Facebook ad or heard us on the radio and want to volunteer?
I would say just show up. I would say two things. Today, you can go ahead and just show up. Another good thing about who we have on our coalition, I think, is that we're very flexible. We can roll with a lot of different situations. We're not rigid. So if you're interested in engaging, please do just show up. And then if you're interested in joining the coalition, then I'll be collecting email addresses. Like we said, we only meet quarterly because we're all busy, engaged people to begin with. And these goals are 3-5 years out. So the more the merrier. Like, we've got a very good, broad selection from the community, which really has the ability to reach sort of everybody in the community. So always happy for other people to engage.
Sure. And this is Sharon. I just want to take the opportunity to put it out there again, because the only way we feed the homeless during Bethel Winter House from December till the last day of March is by local people choosing to donate and volunteer a meal, probably for sometimes 30 people, between 20 and 30 people. That website, so that's the easiest way to pick a date to volunteer, is to go to our website, which is managed by Bethel Community Services Foundation. You can find it online at bethelwinterhouse.org. Click through to the site. Click to the meal calendar. I have been so excited this year that there were so many names, people who were on the calendar to sign up. But when I looked through it for real, I found out, just like last year, although it might be different people, I realized it's still the same. You know, it's just a small handful of people who are cooking lots of meals. And now that December has gone through and January has gone through, we fed people every single night of December. In January, I think I had people forget twice. and we're only halfway, we're only two-thirds of the way through January. And then for February and March, I still have lots of dates that people can click on those dates and choose to volunteer. The app or the site there will send you an email to remind you, and it would be a great way to easily get involved. Just cook a big meal or get together with your coworkers, cook a big meal, and bring it over. We'd appreciate it a lot.
And Sharon, about how many people do you find eating at the Winter House at night?
Well, so that's where I get that number, 20 to 30. I don't know how many people were there this morning. Do you have a guess?
No, I think it was maybe 20, felt like 20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I heard maybe 18. I had always said 20 to 30. Cooking for 20 people, I think it's just good to keep in mind. It's just like a bigger meal.
It's a skill.
Well, it's not that big of a meal. It's not like supper club, which is feeding lots of people. 20 people is just a little bigger. Actually, even I can do it. So you don't have to be all that talented. And I've had a person before who was interested enough in donating and then supplied me with either groceries. I've had people do that before, and with moose meat. Then I have other people who are willing to cook it, that kind of thing. So there are other ways. You don't really have to be talented. That's the other cool thing. These are not picky eaters. Whenever I come in, bring in a meal, they're always so thankful. And I'm like, oh yeah, you haven't tasted it yet. But they're always so thankful.
And so again, what Sharon was describing was cooking for the Winter House, and you can find that meal calendar to volunteer to cook at BethelWinterHouse.org. And you mentioned Supper Club. I know we're about to wrap up, but could you tell folks about what Supper Club is if they're listening and want to make a referral or want to come have a meal?
I don't know much about Supper Club. I know about a lot of food that happens in Bethel. I know about the food bank and I have other programs to get people in touch with food, but I don't really know about the Supper Club. All I know is that it's open to the public, and it's a big meal.
And it's Friday nights at the Covenant Church. So if you're somebody listening who wants to make a referral or somebody who experiences challenges, you know, having enough to eat, Friday nights at the Covenant Church is a free community meal.
And the Covenant Church is probably the newest member of the Housing Coalition, which is excellent because the services they're already providing make a lot of sense to be connected to the coalition. And I think that's it. Just before we sign off, I just want to remind everybody again that the Project Homeless Connect is going on in 15 minutes at the Cultural Center from 11 to 1. There will be a hot meal. There will be volunteers wanting to do a survey with you. There will be resources that you can get connected to. And thank you so much to those who have already participated. And thanks to all the volunteers and all the agency representation and all the people who have you know, met multiple times in a span of about 2 months to prepare this. I think this will be a good community-wide data collecting event, and I think next year we'll be able to do it even better. And I hope this will lead us to some new excellent services.
All right. Thank you for listening to TWC's Peace Talk Radio Show. Have a nice day.
Thanks for listening to Wellness Wednesdays on KYUK, a show about the health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m.